Okay, are we ready? All set? Okay, Jim, remember your three S's? Star, smile, strong. Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Welcome to another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, another episode is posted right here at WGNplus.com. And of course, don't forget to go to my landing page. Just go to the entertainment prompt. You'll see another prompt for Elton Jim's Captain Podcast. Click on that where you will see 114 episodes up there for your binging pleasure. Which must mean that this is episode 115. Yes, we're still searching for episode 109, folks. Where is it? Will it ever be released? That is the question. But that's for the Elton Jimologists to figure out someday. Right now, all we're worried about is episode 115. So thank you for joining the podcast once again. It is much appreciated, and thank you very much for clicking on or downloading or whatever it is or however it is that you find this podcast, either on a weekly basis or at your leisure, because, of course, that is the magic and the lure of podcasting. Anytime you want it, you can get it. It's almost like podcasts are the Burger King of I guess it's not really broadcasting. I don't know what you would call it, but of communication, I guess. I don't know, but you know, that was Burger King's big tagline for many years. Whatever way you want it, we'll give it to you. You know, McDonald's at the very beginning, and they still will do it, but you know, McDonald's always had them pre-made, ready to go. That was the fastness. That was the speed of McDonald's, that there were already, you know, orders and burgers and fries already made. So when you ordered it, boom, they got it. Speed is what made McDonald's initially the phenomenon that it was. And, of course, that's where the term fast food came from. But then Burger King, those who ran Burger King realized that, well, you know, people aren't happy with, you know, ketchup and mustard in a pickle. They want the way they like it. Some people don't like mustard. People don't like anything on it. So we will make it to order. And that was Burger King's initial tagline. And their official niche is that we will provide fast food to you, but we will provide it the way you want it. Anyway, that's what podcasting is. I always seem to go off on tangents, but that's the charm of an Elton Jim. That's why you listen, I would hope. One of the reasons why. But what I wanted to talk about today is both, for me, exciting and redemptive, but at the same time, very sad. So it's kind of a bittersweet kind of thing. But I think through this story, we can also find, you know, it's sad on its face, but if you dig a little deeper, you find a nice rainbow, a nice ray of sunshine. And later in the show, we will have Emily Arminetti back to do a Pop Culture Club segment. Been doing, it's been on, you know, if you've listened irregularity in succession to the podcast, you know, Emily has been on a few times and not, and we're still playing around with the electronics of this, because I'm actually recording these on my own now in my home. And so the equipment has been, interestingly, as most equipment will be, a little testy at times. So I do appreciate your indulgence. And there have been some times when we've had to, give Evelyn a couple of weeks off while I've tried to figure this out, and it's easier for me to do it on my own. But anyway, Emily will be back in this podcast, and we'll be talking about pop culture issues this week. The Emmy nominations, which came out a few weeks ago, and interesting list, and more of the phenomenons of how network television seems to just be fading away, and streaming and cable are the dominant forces today in television. But what I wanted to talk about initially, this piece of news happened within the last couple of days, so it's still something of a fresh wound for me. And I don't want to over-personalize this, but because I will expand on it. But specifically, what happened was here in the Chicago area, and if you listen around the country, I certainly try to make these podcasts, and even around the world, I guess, in theory, I certainly try to make these podcasts as universal as possible, not too specific to a specific day or time or place, so it can be relevant. But this certainly, initially, the first news is very localized and very personal, but I will find a way, hopefully, to expand it, and hopefully you can take something away from it if you don't specifically know what I'm talking about. But here in the Chicago area, for the last 46 years, and that's pretty impressive, pretty impressive record. There has been a record store here in the Chicago area called Val's Hala, and it was owned by a woman named Val Camaletti. And thus the takeoff of Val's Hala. Of course, if you have any sense of history, or if you recently have been watching the show Vikings on the History Channel, at the very least, if you don't know before, Valhalla is the Norwegian form of heaven. That's where Thor and the gods lived, in Valhalla. And so a takeoff on her name, and a kind of a haven, or a heaven, if you will, for music lovers, Val's Hala. And it was located in a suburb of Chicago, right next to Chicago, across the street in some areas from Chicago, named Oak Park, Illinois. And for those of you from not from the Chicago area, Oak Park is one of the more well-known cities, just in general, towns, if you will, for two major people came out of there. It's always been a very well-known area here in the Chicago area, but Ernest Hemingway was born in Oak Park, and his home is still here, the great writer, Ernest Hemingway. And Frank Lloyd Wright, the noted architect, did a lot of his work in the Oak Park and River Forest area. It's an area, as I said, just outside of Chicago. And that's where he had his home and his studio. And you can go on tours of the Frank Lloyd Wright studio and home in Oak Park, Illinois, as well. And then you can not only tour the studio and his home, but you can also then go on a walking tour of many of the homes that he designed in this area. So Oak Park certainly is on the map from a national and even an international standpoint in terms of some of the noteworthy people that were either born here or lived here and did much of their important work here. And I would put Val Camaletti in that in that category. She may not be as well known as Frank Lloyd Wright or Ernest Hemingway. But in terms of her impact in Oak Park and for those who knew her, she certainly deserves some note and recognition. And so she owned this record store for 46 years. For 36 years, it was in the same location. And in the last 12, it was in a new location after, I guess, she lost her lease. And, of course, when she started the record store, that was a thriving kind of business. There were mostly small kind of mom and pop, if you will, record stores. That's where you bought your records. Certainly, the big department stores of the day, like Sears and Goldblatt's and other places, had sold records and had record departments. But certainly there was a great kind of swath of just, you know, personally, individual-owned, independent record stores just opened by people who were big music fans. And what they tried to offer the music fan, as opposed to the more generic department stores, was a real passion for the music, a knowledge of the music, and to really not only sell you the music, but perhaps teach you about it and go that extra mile to help you find that hard-to-find record. You know, once again, now we are in a time when we're downloading music and it's available everywhere. You can almost find any song or any, you know, that you want somewhere, you know, between Apple, iTunes, and other places, and then file sharing. You can pretty much find whatever you want, but in, you know, several decades ago, you had only the hard, tangible record to go by, and it was based on availability and distribution and knowing how to find it. And that's what the smaller independent record stores brought to you, was this enhanced sense of not over customer service, but passion and knowledge for the music. And that's what really kept Val's Halla alive for these 46 years. Sadly, Val Camaletti passed away this week. And she was 78 years old, and she passed away from breast cancer, a two-year battle. And but she proved to be a survivor, not only as a female business owner. If you think about it, 46 years ago, we're talking, you know, in the 70s, late 60s, early 70s, when she got involved in opening up her own business, and women really did not open up their own businesses back then. And so she was a trailblazer in many ways, and but more than that, she was a huge, huge, passionate and knowledgeable music fan. Very articulate, very intelligent. Ultimately, she was a people person. And those are the type of people that really should own their own businesses. And what she did is basically follow the axiom that many people, when they're talking about careers, always give you that advice, which is do what you love to do. And I think she, you know, Val proved by having this business for almost 50 years and making it successful and really having to trudge through and survive and get through a lot of hard times, because let's not forget, while in the 70s and 80s, the independent kind of local record stores were dominant. And that's where people went. You went to the record store in your neighborhood. As time went on, and the bigger stores, the big box stores, if you will, like Walmart and Best Buy and Target and places like that, began to really saturate the business landscape around the country. They could, because of their size and their volume, they could offer prices that were lower than the smaller independent stores. And then really what helped those big box stores was the advent of the compact disc. Because the compact disc, first of all, had a high markup, so it was advantageous for a big company to get into that business because there was a lot of money to be made. There was a big markup on CDs. They only cost about a dollar to make, and they were sold for about $15. So that's a big markup. There wasn't that big of a markup on vinyl and cassettes back in the 50s and 60s and 70s, but CDs there was. And as I said, they can offer people lower prices and still make money because they were ordering their inventory on such great volume. So in the 80s and 90s and certainly in the 2000s, as places like Best Buy and Walmart and Target became almost pillars of communities, and some towns were built around those stores, certainly shopping centers and strip malls were, they really began to edge out the smaller independent record stores because of their size. Not only could they offer better prices, but they also could offer a much wider variety of musical choices. They had the floor space to do it. And if you remember the Best Buys and still the Walmarts, I mean, their record departments were huge. And most independent record stores were very small. They were storefronts. And so there was a huge advantage. And people, obviously, were flocking to those big box stores because of the price and because of the variety and the number. You could go to Best Buy, and they probably had 50 of the new album by somebody, whereas the independent store may have only stocked 7 or 8 or 10 of them because they really couldn't depend on how many they were going to sell. They had to, whatever they bought, they had to make sure they sold, whereas the big box could absorb having 40 in the store at one time and not selling right away. So there was a lot of advantages, and they certainly took advantage of those. And while certainly the smaller independent record stores still offered you that service and that knowledge, many people, for the most part, are casual music listeners. And it was nice to have that added value that the smaller independent record stores could offer, but ultimately people were looking for convenience and price. And as I said, these big box stores were everywhere. You'd be in a store maybe looking to buy a phone or an air conditioner, and oh, you picked up a couple of CDs on the way there. Whereas if you wanted to go to the smaller independent record store, you had to make a special trip, and that's all they had. And they weren't everywhere on a major busy street. You had to make a concerted effort. So there were, reasons for this. And many smaller record stores gradually, and in some cases quickly, just couldn't survive. But places like Val's Hala in Oak Park was able to survive because of what Val brought to the table. And as I said, not only was it her passion and her knowledge of music, but she was a people person. And when you came in there, she didn't give you the hard sell at all. You'd walk into her store, and it was a big store, and it was filled with used records and new records and 45s and albums and cassettes and hard-to-find records and imports and you name it, and magazines. She bought records as well. As I said, she had used records as well as old records, so that was certainly a nice niche, too, if you wanted to pay less than a new record and was maybe a hard to find one going back in an artist's catalog. But when you walked in the store, she said hi, but there was no hard sell. There was no expectation. You never felt that she was staring you down, waiting for you to buy something. She certainly would ask, if there's something that you need, let me know. If there's a song, some of the stories that people were telling since her passing was that people would walk into the store, and this is what I'm talking about in terms of real value added. You'd walk into Val's Hala And people would come. All they would know is, I heard this song on the radio, and it goes like this. And they would hum it. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And she would, oh, that you mean blah, blah, blah by blank. And here it is. And that's the kind of service you wouldn't be able to get at Best Buy or Walmart. And that was the charm of the place. And you know, what I always loved about it is it looked exactly like you'd like a record store to look. It was certainly organized, and it had all the bins, and there was a slot for area for CDs and for albums and for 45 singles and cassettes. But then on the walls there were all these, and still are. I mean, the place is still open. There's still not any news yet if the store is going to close since her passing. But she was such a main part of that store. Who knows if anybody else can. Can keep it going because of still now. It's not the big box stores that are the competition. It's the downloading, the ease and the convenience of downloading. And yes, there is the last 5, 6, 7, 10 years, there's been a revival in vinyl, and that certainly, I think, has helped the independent record stores that still survive. But it's still not the dominant way people purchase music. That is downloading. And so there is still a difficulty in the smaller store staying open. And so it is those extra little added values and the personalities of the stores or the owners that have allowed the few remaining independent record stores to stay open. Because, as I said, most people today are just clicking and buying. And younger people, that's all they know. And that's one reason why vinyl has become popular or resurgent to some extent for some millennials, because they've grown up in the digital age, certainly with CDs, but for the most part now, even from their early 20s on, the downloading sensation. And so, yeah, the idea of going into a record store and spending an hour in there and touching the records and going to the different bins and going to the artist bins of your favorite artist, or just seeing who is out there and what is out there in terms of available music. Those of us who grew up going to record stores, and I certainly fall into that category, for those of us who look at music as an important part of their lives and not just background noise, the record store was an oracle. The record store was like a library where you learned, where you hung out. I didn't live far from Val's. And when I certainly was able to drive, I heard about it and always read about it and started to go there on a regular basis, and actually moved close to it and would go there regularly over the last 10 or 15 years. But I grew up going to a variety of different record stores, some small mom-and-pop independent ones. I would certainly go to the bigger store sometimes and buy my albums at Sears or Goldblatt's, or there was a department store in Chicago in the Six Corners areas in the 70s and 80s called Keys, and I would go there. They had a pretty good record department. But there was also a place called Deluxe Records on Milwaukee Avenue in that same area, just down the street from the big department stores of the eras like Sears. And that store had everything. And there was an older guy in there and either his son or his nephew, and you could find almost any record you wanted. Once again, it was the same thing. It was filled with records. They gave you a personal touch. They had hard-to-find records. And just like Val's, there were posters everywhere. It reminded me of my bedroom. That's why I was so comfortable in going to record stores. And, of course, probably the one place I made most pilgrimages to here in the Chicago area was a place that is still open, thankfully, called Rolling Stone Records, which was in the Harlem Avenue and Irving Park Road area, the hip, if you will. Harlem and Irving Plaza. And it was a huge record store. And there were They had big cardboard cutouts that were painted by an artist that I always longed to buy. I never did. The music was always blaring. And once again, when you walked in there, they had cassettes and rec albums and 45s and imports. They even had the pins and the buttons that you put on your jacket. And it was just the coolest place in the world. And me and my friends would literally go there every week. Every week we would stop into Rolling Stone to see what was new and what new albums were out there. And then, of course, you would, they had this bin at the front of the store. And that was like the discount bin. And there were some older albums in there, but they would also throw some new albums in the, a new album, around that time was probably $6 or $7.99. But in this bin, they were $4.99. And if you could get to that bin, you might get lucky and find a new album for $4.99. And they even had coupons for $2 off in the local music magazines like the Illinois Entertainer. So you'd go to Rolling Stone and get your $2 off or buy one, get one free. But record stores for me were places to just, that you made weekly, if not bi-weekly, trips to. If I had nothing to do, we would just look at each other and go, want to go to Rolling Stone? Yeah. And we'd spend an hour there. You want to go to Val's? Yeah. You want to go to Deluxe? Yeah. That's what we would do. Because, as I said, music was really important to me and my friends. And it wasn't just something that you occasionally listen to. We loved, and still do, at least I do, love music. And as I said, I've got 24,000 songs on my iPod. Going to those record stores helped create that collection, both on vinyl and certainly on CD. And but what was so great, as I said, about Val's, as you walked in there, and it was her that really sold that place, because her prices weren't the best prices. It was always higher, but you could find things you couldn't find anywhere else that you were willing to pay for. And as I said, just the environment and the atmosphere that she created, sometimes you just said, okay, you know what? Being here and being with Val and talking with her and learning some things, it's worth the extra $2. And that's what she counted on. As I said, the last 10 or 15 years, I was going in there to buy music as well as to visit with Val. I became a regular, and she knew who I was. From the radio, as well as just coming in there all the time, and she knew my passion for music, and especially for Elton John. And over the last several years, I bought a lot of the vinyl, newer vinyl releases from Val. I had her order them for me. In fact, I saw her about 3 weeks before she passed away, and one of those reasons was I was buying a new Elton John album that had come out, two tribute albums that were just released. And of course, I went there on record store days the last several years, and she would have a big blowout. She would have live music. She was such a supporter of the local music scene. She really was the real deal. She lived and breathed music. And her passion for it went back to the early 60s when, as a woman, when it was not common for women to even have jobs, she went out there and blazed a trail for a career, and she worked at Capitol Records in the early 60s. And, of course, Capitol at that time was one of the biggest record companies in the world, because they had both the Beatles and the Beach Boys, as well as other artists. And so she was right there at ground zero when the whole rock and roll renaissance of the 60s started, and she worked in the promotion department. And worked there for a couple of years. And then, as I said, she started her own business in the record store business, which was a big business. Don't forget, Brian Epstein, the Beatles manager, was a record store owner. His family owned a record store. That's how he heard about the Beatles. It was a thriving business, these, as I said, these independent, smaller record stores. And as I said, she had to go through hard times, and in terms of the business, especially with downloading, but she did survive it, and she survived it out of grit and determination and her own personality. As I said, I would go in there, and sometimes I wouldn't even be buying anything. I was just kind of like, well, I haven't seen Val in a while. And I'd go there every month or so, and I would never get out of there in less than an hour and a half or 2 hours. And she would talk to me in between the customers walking in and buying things, and we would talk about music and life, and she was very intelligent. She had a great knowledge on several different subjects. She would tell stories about her past. She'd listen to your stories, and she certainly had her own opinions on things. I always walked out of there learning something and feeling better, and it was always, a perfect storm for me, because it was a record store as well as a place where I could socialize with somebody who I really tracked with. And it was just a special place. And those of us who went there on a regular basis and came to know Val Camaletti on a personal basis, we certainly will miss her. And but the bigger, I guess, message that I would like to send as a tribute to Val, and I was so happy to see here locally in Chicago, her passing made the news. It was on it was in the major newspapers, in the Chicago Sun-Times and the Chicago Tribune. They described her as an icon, and she would have loved that. She had a big personality. I had her on my radio show a couple of times and interviewed her, and she said that, some of the interviews I did with her were some of the best she ever did, and I really took that as a huge compliment, because, as I said, she knew what she was doing, and she knew good from bad. So to get a compliment from her like that really meant a lot to me in terms of my own abilities and stuff. And so she was just a special person, and she will be missed. But if there is a lesson about Val's life and influence, it really is, having the drive and the ambition and the guts to do what you want to do what you love, and despite the difficulties and the ebbs and flows and the highs and lows and the real hard times. And there was a few years ago where they had to even, before this vinyl resurgence, which probably helped a little with her business, but there were times about 5-10 years ago where there was a chance that the place could have closed, and they had a fundraiser to keep the store alive, because it was such a local and community just meeting place, an iconic place that people did not want to see Valhalla go away. And since her passing, hopefully it will not, and hopefully someone or others will come by and take that over and keep her spirit alive there. But my point is, in terms of a lasting impact, yes, the record store will always be something that is close to our hearts for those of us who went in there on a regular basis. But her influence on a long term is really about someone who was driven, ambitious, strong, unwavering in their goals and their passions, and really brought themselves into their work and into their business. She was both a business person as well as a person. And those two attributes, I think, is what made her business survive for almost 50 years. That's quite an accomplishment, despite the highs and lows. The fact that people in the community would work that hard to keep her store alive and do fundraisers and donate money, what does that say? You don't see that very often. That's part of capitalism. Some businesses survive and some don't. But very rarely do you see the community rally around a business to make sure it stays open. That's when you know that a business and its owner made a connection with the community and its customers. And as I said, she supported local music. She supported local artists. She supported the community. She worked hard within the community to help other businesses and other new business owners, especially women business owners in her, following in her footsteps as a role model and a mentor. She was all those things: role model, mentor, business person, expert in music, and really good friend to those of us who knew her. And so I guess the message and the lesson that we could learn from someone like Val Camaletti on her passing is that if you can, do what you love. And the hardest part is even in those low times to have the confidence in yourself to stick with it. So many times people regret. They have big dreams and they gave those dreams away. And as time goes on, they regret those dreams. I really believe that Val had no regrets. Perhaps she would have liked to live longer, certainly. But 78 isn't a bad run. But in terms of her life and her career, she was doing exactly what she wanted to do. And even in hard times and in financial difficulties with that store, when you'd walk in, she'd always have a big smile on her face. How you doing? You would never know that either this store was in financial trouble or was a huge success. That wasn't the customer's problem. That was her problem, and she never shared that. What she shared with everybody who walked through that door was her passion, her knowledge of the music, but really her compassion and her interest in every person who walked in. And that's what made Val's Hala a special business and a place you wanted to go in. And that's what made Val Camaletti a very special person. And Val's Hala, the record store, and Val Camaletti, the person, will be missed. She is proof that all you need is love. And welcome back to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And now we go to the Pop Culture Club with Emily Arminetti. Hello, Emily.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Well, we are doing better. We had some technical difficulties last week, but thankfully we are back now, and you are back, and so it's good to have you. And so the last time we spoke, I wanted to talk about the Emmy nominations, but before, I just thought we should do a little follow-up. So the last time we spoke...
A little update.
Yeah, a little update. So the last time we spoke, I was, of course, the curmudgeon that I am. You, of course, gave us the greatest tagline, and the one that I will now always associate with you. We were talking about the new romance between Ariana Grande and the comedian from Saturday Night Live, Pete Davidson.
Yes.
And I was saying how they just met less than a month and they already got engaged and they were getting tattoos and everything was on Instagram and they were buying $16 million apartments and this was this whirlwind romance. And I was just saying, A, why are we so obsessed with this? And B, you know, there is no way this is going to last. You know, the crusty veteran that I am.
Right.
But Emily, the optimistic, positive force. What was your tag phrase when I said this cannot last? What did you say?
I said I root for love.
You root for love. So Emily roots for love. So, go ahead.
Well, so there's something really super weird happened after that. So maybe like, I don't know, a week or so later, I myself was listening to a podcast I've never listened to before. The host of the podcast is someone that I don't even know. Like never, she's known for a podcast. It's not like she does other things, right?
Right.
Have never listened to this podcast, not a single episode. And she was talking to someone about, I don't even remember what it was. And she actually said, and I quote, I root for love. And I thought it was so weird. I almost actually sent you the link to the podcast because I was like, that is very bizarre. And the podcast, The podcast that I was listening to had been recorded, like, I don't know, a couple months ago or something. It was really bizarre. So now I'm thinking, maybe it's just like a girl thing.
Wow.
Maybe we all have this gut instinct to...
You guys all root for love.
It was very bizarre. And it was so weird that, like, it was verbatim what I said.
So now you're just one of the crowd. Here I thought,
but now it's just underscoring that's the right attitude to have.
Well, you know? I guess if you're you know, a 40 something or 30 something or 20 something woman, but if you're
30 something female involved in a podcast,
yeah. But if you're a crusty curmudgeon, that is not. We don't root for love.
You don't.
No, I don't root for love at all.
Oh. Wait. A long time.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we weren't that young. 27. 27. 27. It wasn't that young. Yeah, but when I got married, we were one of the last in our friends groups to get married.
Yeah. It changes over time.
I mean, now, my gosh, people aren't getting married until their mid 30s. You know.
I know, but that's a problem because all of the. So this is what I think. Like my kids' generation, they better start the getting married again.
Right.
Otherwise, none of their parents are going to be around to see them get married. Or
exactly.
So, like, when my kids are in their 40s, I'm going to be in my 80s. Young people, that whole generation is going to have to completely shift things if they want their parents.
Have faith, because even though my mom lied about her age by 7 years.
Good for her.
Or 8 years. Yeah, she lied by 8 years. As I've told the story, I believe, here on the podcast, certainly on the radio. When she got sick and I had to start taking care of her financial matters, I found out that she had been lying about her age my whole life. If not longer. Oh, yeah. For 8 years. We don't forget, we even threw her a 70th birthday party when she knew she was 78. Yeah. And of course, when I confronted her in her mid-80s, when I finally found out about this, I said, I think she actually started to believe it. You know what I mean? And then the first thing she said when I confronted her that she was clearly not the age, just by simple mathematics, and her first response was, "I don't look 83." I'm like, "It's not the point. Right. Your doctor needs to know you're not 83."
Yeah, that's kind of important. No, actually.
You look fantastic.
Yes.
Definitely.
That's the way forward, is to actually lie the other way around. What you don't want to do is be like, well, I'm 40 when you're really 47, and have people be like, oh my gosh, like, what a lady, you've been living, life has been hard.
Yeah. No, but but my point is, so when I got married, I thought, let's see, I thought my mom was 65. Or no, 60, 62. But she was really 70.
Wow.
Yeah. So my point is, you could still be 70 and your kids are getting married, you'll still be there. So don't worry.
Well, but once again, they can't wait as long as I do.
Yeah, right.
Relative.
Right, exactly. But so to get back to our point, so now we know, and you are on the record as saying that you root for love.
Yeah, why not?
Okay, why not? So now, all right, so now what I find interesting, as we do a little follow-ups here in the time since we first brought this up and you first made your declaration. So, first of all, and a not surprising move, apparently, after chronicling their entire whirlwind romance on social media for a month and a half or 2 months, suddenly, Pete Davidson, who has come to fame not because he is the funniest guy in Saturday Night Live, but because he winds up going out with one of these bigger rock stars of the time. But he now shut down his Instagram.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he suddenly wiped his Instagram.
Right.
And so 2 months ago they couldn't wait to post something of them shopping and kissing and getting tattoos and dyeing their hair blonde and everything. They couldn't wait to just document every piece of minutia of this blossoming love affair. But then, of course, the other side of that coin comes is that if you're going to share that, you're going to get criticism.
Of course, yeah. That's what social media is all about.
Yeah, yeah. We thrive for that's why it's there. And so apparently it was fun for them to share it, but it wasn't too much fun for them to read the negatives and the pushback after the initial, oh, look who's a couple, and there's all this initial excitement. They were so open and so much public displays of affection and chronicling this that then they were starting to get on people's nerves because it was getting too much. And so now they are not Instagramming. So I found that interesting, but I can't believe that. But you know darn well that they are of that age group. They're both in their mid-20s. They will not be able to stay off forever.
Oh, they'll be back.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So then, right on the heels, almost right after that podcast that we recorded, when you, as I said, declared to the world that you root for love, I have to ask you now again if that still stays in place, because then, on the heels of the Ariana Grande and Pete Davidson, which... You know, certainly news. I mean, Ariana Grande is I know she's a big deal.
Oh yeah. I think right now she's probably, maybe we'll say ranked number one in terms of like female pop stars in the world.
Is she that? I mean, before this romance, would you have said that she was number one? Really?
I think she's up there. I mean, if you were to Google like top 10 female pop stars, I think she would be up there, if not number one. But see, that's always a shifting. That's shifting ground.
Right.
Like, change depending on who's got a new album out or whatever, but I think in terms of popularity, I don't know if it's a record sales.
Right.
It could be at this point.
Yeah.
But she's up there.
Okay. Well, she certainly helped elevate Pete Davidson's profile because, as I said, he wasn't even hard. I mean, he's been at Saturday Night Live for several years, but never a breakout star by any means.
No, I think his thing was more, if anything, I think he was known for being one of the youngest, if not
Yeah.
cast member to join
SNL. Yeah, but
when he joined.
But this certainly has helped him. Now, so on the heels of this whirlwind engagement, one of the without a doubt, at least at one time, I don't know about now, as you said, it's a very shifting kind of a designation, but one of the bigger stars in the last 10 years, or even the last five, Justin Bieber.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
The Beeb, if you will. He gets engaged from seemingly out of nowhere. I mean, I don't know. I didn't hear about this before. To Hailey Baldwin.
He didn't call you an asshole.
No. Well, I didn't know that they were. I mean, like I said, I'm not a big right. gossip guy, but I do breeze through the, I didn't know they were a thing, but all of a sudden we get the announcement of engagement between him and Hailey Baldwin, and then we find out that Hailey Baldwin is the daughter of Stephen Baldwin, the actor who is in Usual Suspects and Biosphere and a lot of other movies. And then, of course, he is the brother of Alec Baldwin, who is one of the bigger stars right now, certainly helped by his Donald Trump impersonation, which has become a sensation on Saturday Night Live. So the funny thing is that if you think about it, the Bieber and Baldwin romance is actually connected to the Grande Davidson because of the Saturday Night Live connection.
Oh, yeah.
You can do like a Kevin Bacon thing in that, Alec Baldwin is the brother of Stephen Baldwin. Stephen Baldwin is the father of Hailey Baldwin. Hailey Baldwin is engaged to Justin Bieber. Alec Baldwin is on Saturday Night Live. Pete Davidson, who's going out with Ariana Grande, is on Saturday Night Live. So they are connected.
It's getting a bit incestuous.
Yes. So now I have to ask you about this one.
Oh.
Because apparently they really kind of just met.
No. Well, so I think that this is the thing. I think they just started dating, but I think the party line on those two is that they've been like best friends for years. And, he's been on and off with Selena Gomez, another very popular pop star and actress. I guess she's kind of an actress sometimes.
Yeah, well, that's in quotes.
Well, yeah.
That's like saying that Mariah Carey was an actress in Glitter.
Well, she was in that one movie, that Spring Break movie.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
That movie was actually really popular.
Yeah.
Female leads in it.
Yeah, that is true.
But anyway, so he's been on and off with her for many years, and so I think everyone was like watching that romance. But apparently, behind the scenes, he's always been very close friends with Hailey Baldwin. And it sounds like from that friendship, there was like a little spark, and then they started dating, and then bam, they're engaged.
Well, I have to wonder then too. Now, Stephen Baldwin has to be happy.
In which case, you kind of have to say, well, hey, don't people say like you should marry your best friend? That isn't that like doesn't your spouse become like your best friend? And so then, if you're already if there's a spark with the person who's already your best friend, why not?
Well, I'm sure Stephen Baldwin's got to be happy, because if there's a prenup, or maybe there won't be, then suddenly the Baldwin family gets a piece of Bieber money. So,
Stephen Baldwin might need that.
Yes. He hasn't done a lot in a while.
Who knows? I don't know what the deeds. Yeah, we don't know what his finances are.
I would have to think.
I mean, he's made a lot of money, but who knows whether he's.
Yeah. So here's my question. So here now, once again, despite this perhaps long-term friendship that blossomed into love, which happens and which is fine, but still, all of a sudden, it just seems like, they're both, she's like 20 or 21, isn't she? She's very young.
I don't even know how old he is.
And he's like 24, 25, because don't forget, he's been around since he was a teenager.
Oh, yeah.
So right away, it seems as if there is no such thing now as courtship. We go right to engagement.
Well, maybe this is the new trend among the younger generation. Maybe they're going to start a new trend of getting married younger, and then they have these very quick surprise engagements.
Okay, so here's my question. Even though you are on record as being one who, as you have said, roots for love, do you think, as I asked you about Pete Davidson and Ariana Grande, which is where you came up with your Root for Love slogan?
Oh, okay.
Do you think, two-part question, A, how long will this last, or B, will they ever even get married?
I don't know. Let me look into my crystal ball. Let's see.
What do you think the chances are for a 21-year-old model and a 24-year-old, clearly immature, as we've seen in his past?
He's only 20. Okay, I just looked it up. He's only 24 years old. So and she's 21. He is 24.
Oh. Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, right.
So they're all excited. They're showing their big ring, but
think about it this way: he's been a star since he was like what, early teens. So there's probably also an element of arrested development there with him. So even if he's 24, he might have the mindset still of like a 17.
Well, we've seen the way he's acted. Remember how he was throwing? He was like, he was getting arrested every couple of weeks for crazy behavior in his neighborhood, throwing water balloons, and remember all that?
Scandal, oh yeah.
Yeah, so I'm just putting, because I, of course, I'm going to stay true to my curmudgeonness and say, I don't even think, now from what I've read, which is, this is scaring me that I'm even reading this and knowing this. But now, you know, once again, this becomes a very big celebrity kind of marriage, because you've got the Alec Baldwin side and the Baldwin family involved here, too, in addition to, Justin Bieber's fame. So now Kim Basinger, who is now no longer married to Alec Baldwin, however, Haley Baldwin and Alec Baldwin's daughter, Ireland, are cousins. And so, and Ireland is in her 20s now, and so apparently, Ireland is apparently, according to Kim Basinger, Ireland is going to be standing up for the wedding.
Yeah, if there is.
Yeah, so they've already, I mean, the Grande Davidsons, you know, they haven't really announced bridal parties, or they haven't sent save the dates out. But it sounds like the Bieber Baldwins are at least
the
Biebwins. Is that what they're called? Is that what this?
The
yeah, I like the Biebwins.
Someone's gonna come up with a name.
Yeah, I like the
when they come up with the super couple. There's a word for that.
I like the Biebwind. I like the Biebwins. The Biebwins is funny. So between they've already at least, but see, once again, they're doing all the fun stuff. Oh, my bridesmaids and my groomsmen, and how fun is this? And they are totally into the trappings of a wedding and the planning of a wedding. I can't believe there's been a lot of discussion about what it's like to have a marriage and a relationship. That's where I think, and that sadly is what I'm seeing overall. I'm seeing a lot of people, and forget about just celebrities, a lot of people are getting engaged and they're not even thinking about marriage.
Right. Well, and I think the younger you are, the more exciting it is as a concept.
But I think everybody wants...
The longer the engagement goes on, the less likely it is they make it to the altar.
So oh, yeah.
Either one of those couples jumps on a plane, goes to, I don't know, wherever they go, to elope, I don't know, wherever, say Barks or
right.
Wherever, I don't know, let's just say. If they jump on a plane tomorrow and they get married, then or they're going to do it next week or the week after, and that's what they're planning, then obviously they will make it to the altar. But the longer this takes, I say there's no chance. And especially like Justin Bieber with his history of being on again, off again, on again, off again, particularly with like Selena Gomez. And that to me tells me this is someone who likes drama. They like the drama of breaking up and then making up and then breaking up again. So I'm going to, I wouldn't bet on it.
Well, and I, wow. So now, wow.
And
right.
Useless celebrity.
Right. And wow, and that coming from somebody who is on the record,
I know,
as rooting for love. I mean, wow.
I can root for it, but I can't make it possible happen.
Well, I just to me this just smacked of kind of. I don't know if it's jealousy. I don't know what the word is, but I just think in this look at me, kind of society we're in now, that this Grande Davidson, romance was dominating everything in the social media world, and these two are got to be immersed in the social media world, Bieber and Haley Baldwin. And so you know darn well that this was just like, well, wait a minute. Why are they grabbing all the headlines? You know, we need to grab some headlines too, so let's just get engaged. And I think it was a competition. You know, sadly, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, between celebrities, there used to be competitions on the work that they did. Like, oh, yeah, you think... that album is good. We'll wait till you see the album we're going to put out. Now it's just like, watch how irresponsible I can be. If you think you're being irresponsible, look, I'm Justin Bieber. I'm more popular than you, so I'm going to steal the headline away from you at least for a couple of weeks. And so now we are stuck with two celebrity weddings. Now the question is who gets to the altar or who gets there first?
Who gets there first, right. Right, exactly.
So I don't know. But
and maybe who's not. I mean, I feel like if I'm Selena Gomez, now I'm out there. You know, the next guy I meet, I'm going to be like, hey, why don't we elope to St. Louis? Really,
well, yeah, but and I just get a sense in the bigger picture. I mean, obviously, and many times, you know, society and culture is pushed, sadly, by what celebrities do. And I say sadly because most celebrities really make horrible decisions in their lives.
Well, they live very extraordinary lives. So I can see how that ends. Happening,
but my
because
point is that we start following. You know, people don't. To your point, most people don't live extraordinary lives, and they have to live within boundaries and within actual circumstances, and they are trying to project their lives onto these celebrity lives, and they are a million miles away. And while they follow the celebrities' behaviors. They don't have the lifestyles to support those.
Yeah.
And so that's where you get in trouble. So that's why I'm, like I said, what we're seeing now are these extravagant engagements where you hire a photographer and a videographer and it has to be done on a mountain or it has to be done, you know, in a flash mob or it has to be done. On an island, or it has to be done in a major
a flash mob.
Production way. It can't just be done at a restaurant. It has to be a major deal on a scoreboard at a baseball game. And even now, that's cliched. But so everybody has to have that, and of course, the woman gets to walk around with the ring, which is all important, and how big the ring is most important. And that's fine if you're Justin Bieber. To buy a $200,000 ring. But what's sad is you've got a lot of guys who are spending fortunes on these rings because their girlfriends, who are living middle-class lives, they want the big ring like Hailey Baldwin got.
Well, I mean, I don't. It sounds like a bad idea if you don't have the resources.
That's what I see happening.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't know. When I was 24 years old, I was still like going to my parents' house to do my laundry. So I don't know how any of these people are pulling off any of this.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I found it funny how on the heels of this this Grande Davidson romance, then boom, we had the Bieber Baldwin engagement. And I can only imagine, you know, who's next. And before, so we will see. As I said, now it's a horse race.
Right.
So now
we will be staying right on top of this.
I mean, now it's a horse race. We're in the stretch here. We're going to see.
Right.
They both come out of the gate, and now they're around the first turn. So we'll see where they go when they get to the stretch and to the finish line. But I also had to mention real quickly, and maybe we won't get to the Emmys this week, and maybe we'll just stay on this because it seems to be flowing here. But so then another thing, and now once again, I'm surprised how much I know about this because usually I'm sort of stuck in my own little world. But being a pop culture person, you sort of have to stay open to this, even if it's not in your wheelhouse or that interesting. So now, were you surprised to hear this news about Demi Lovato?
Oh, yeah.
The
singer, I guess...
another young 25-year-old singer who appeals to young kids and young girls, and suddenly you find out she's been living a very dark life. She had a heroin overdose.
Well, I mean, they initially were reporting a heroin overdose. I think they've kind of taken a little bit of there's a little bit of backpedaling going on, and I don't know if that's now her people are spinning it, but they're saying, I guess more broadly, that it was an opioid you know, overdose, not necessarily heroin. And I don't know if that's just spin coming from her people now that this has been widely reported and they're kind of on it and they're getting a handle on the situation. And we know how that whole crisis control thing happens, right? So yeah, it's still a big deal. She was found celebrity at a very young age. She's kind of had her ups and downs. Like her relationships have been kind of covered a lot in the media. She did have a period of time where she did admit that she had some issues with addiction, and she had gone to rehab, and then she kind of emerged like this, you know, stronger person, and she was living the sober life. And so, you know, on one hand, it's not like a complete shock because she has been candid about her past drug abuse, but I don't think people knew that it was to that level. I mean, because heroin is, I mean, that's like what I got, you know, it is like the most addictive drug that you could possibly get involved with, apparently.
Like, didn't she have like weight issues too?
I think there was some of that. There was an element of that following her rehab, which is probably pretty normal. I think when you're abusing substances and then you sort of get clean and stuff like that, I mean, different, you know, your body reacts in different ways. And she addressed that publicly because there was, you know, of course, there was scrutiny and criticism of her. Unfortunately, I mean, it's pretty unfair that, you know, that people kind of do that, but they do that to celebrities. And, you know, I think it's not totally surprising, but it is sad to see her take a step back like this, because she did sort of come out and say, I've got my life together, I'm stronger for it, you know, and so she's taken a few steps backward. But I think maybe that's to be expected, some, you know, when you do have substance abuse issues, that's a lifelong battle that you're dealing with, right?
I think it's interesting because you are seeing these people now. And many of these, as you were talking about Bieber and, you know, and some of these other people, you know, that sort of like your Miley Cyruses, who, you know, have had these careers starting back when they were in their teens. And a lot of these, you know, what's funny is, I don't know if Demi Lovato, was she somebody that like came through that, through the Disney world?
I think she might have, yeah.
I don't know. If I was a parent at this point, I would say don't have your kids go on a Disney show.
Well, maybe don't have your kids working at all. Yeah. I mean, kids are supposed to be kids,
yeah,
you know.
I'm like, just saying is that you know, that this is, you know, most of these kids, they've had these long careers already. Like you're saying, I mean, they're 25 and they've had 10 years in the spotlight already, and they're only 25, and it's tough enough being a 14-year-old on its face.
Yeah.
And growing up and then being an 18 and 19 year old and growing up with fame and fortune, or at least, you know, some sort of that. And we're sadly starting to see now that the result is that, when they make it through those difficult years, if they do make it through, they're certainly scarred. There's some consequences to be had for that. Yes, there's fame and fortune, but when you've got somebody like who's 25 years old and has already, got some kind of major drug problem here, it is almost hearkening back to like things were back in the 60s when the whole music scene was beginning and nobody knew about drugs and they were using them as a fun thing. Today, people are using them as an escape, you know, for pain.
Well,
it's not so much experimentation, it's survival.
Right. Well, okay. And so like, I'm looking at Demi Lovato's career history. She started on Barney and Friends. Okay.
Oh,
so imagine how young she would have been then,
God,
starting out. Now think about
you.
It like this too. Forget about the fame. Imagine being like, okay, it's time to go to work, to like your 5-year-old. And then these kids, that's how they grow up. Like every day they're like out there doing the daily grind. And even if they're in front of cameras and whatever, I mean, and we all like to think like, oh, that's not real work, right? You know, but the reality is, I mean, these are kids, and you're like, okay, now it's time to go. Now it's time to memorize 50 pages of lines. Now you need to go and do your dog and pony show for all these grownups. Now you need to go to the tutor for 3 hours, and then you're back on the set. And, you know, you do kind of have to feel sorry for these kids. I mean, you know, who, I mean, we've been in the workforce for a long time. You know, you eventually get tired and worn out, right? Imagine if you had started that when you're, you know, a small child. I mean, I have a hard enough time getting my kids, you know, it's like time to get ready for soccer practice. You know, I couldn't imagine if I had to day in and day out be like, right, now we got to be at the set by 6 a.m. for hair and makeup. Did you memorize your lines? Like, it's kind of awful what these kids go through.
Well, and think about her situation, to your point about, you know, not only did she have to do all that, but she had to go to work every day with the prospect of talking to a purple dinosaur.
Right, she had to hear that song.
Yeah, hear that bad song.
Day in and day out.
You know, and what was Barney's girlfriend's name? Binny Bop or something?
Oh, I don't need. Didn't even know Barney had a girlfriend.
Oh yeah, remember
wow.
She was. Yeah. Oh come on.
You know, my kids weren't really ever big on Barney,
no.
So I fortunately that I escaped that particular.
But yeah, so
you know,
I was
version
just,
of hell.
I was just kind of shocked in this time to just see that. You know, we are. I think once again, this kind of age group and this era of celebrity, they do not have. And I'm not saying well in my day because there were just as many screwed up relationships and just as many tabloid relationships going back. I remember being a very young kid and not even knowing who they were. And all I would see and hear people talking about was, you know, Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton. And I mean, so
yes.
there has been this you know, this spotlight on celebrity and celebrity, you know, marriages and courtships. It's been on since there's been Hollywood. So no
sure.
question about that. It's only been elevated, obviously, with the internet. But I think what the biggest difference, though, is that when you heard about, in the past, these celebrity marriages or these celebrity courtships like Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton, or in the 80s, Madonna and Sean Penn, and all these high-profile, big-star kind of marriages or courtships, mostly at that time, they were trying to stay out of the limelight.
Right.
And so that's where the difference is that while they were, there was no question that that was still going on, the commingling, and there were superstar couples, but they were starting to try to stay out of coverage, out of the limelight, away from the tabloids. And what we've gotten today in the social media world is just the opposite of showing everyone every part of minutia. And what I think is interesting is, When you hear about celebrities and they talk about fame in general, they talk about the pressures of the fame itself and the paparazzi and the celebrity coverage and how that did in many ways, you know, take a toll on their relationship. Jennifer
Yes.
Garner has said that about her relationship with Ben Affleck.
Yes.
And now, though, you are seeing that people and the younger people, they've been grown up in this social media world, they have a complete opposite. But once again, now when Ariana Grande and Davidson pull their Instagram accounts, first it was the hiding, which took a toll, and the adversarial view of between the person and the media is what took their toll. But now apparently the sharing and the exposure can take a toll.
Yeah. Wow.
So I don't know what the answer is, but I have to say, you are so, right now, you, because I think last time, and we'll end up on this, last time you said you rooted for love, so you were betting that Pete and Ariana would stay together. Big shocking
Whoa.
News. So, but no, that's what you said. Go back and listen.
Did I say they were going to stay together? I feel like I was more taking the stance of, you know what? If they're happy, I hope that
all
they
right.
have a
I'm
nice long relationship.
All right, but I'm just saying is now in a couple weeks later, you have come out on record as saying that you do not expect the Bieber Baldwin marriage to take place. So I'm wondering how much do you really root for
love? I do. I want them all to be very, very happy. That is what I want. I wish.
God.
I wish.
Blech.
I hope Blech. They can. But you know, I think the odds are a little bit stacked against them. So I but hopefully they all like. I wish them all a happily ever after.
I think that would be great if every
everybody in the world could have. Oh
my God. And on that sappy note, we will say thank you for your insights and your sappy.
You know what, Jim? And you are welcome.
We will talk next week and get your Emmy picks ready, okay?
Sounds good.
Okay, take care. And so that is another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podcasting. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted. So thank you for listening. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, the only podcast from the end of the web to your screen.